The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International. Have you ever known anyone who overcame the fear of flying?
I don't know about most people. A lot of people grumble when they say we're going to stay on the ground another 15 minutes while maintenance checks something out. I'm always like, guys, check it out, right? Find everything there is to find and fix it.
Yeah.
Because a crack on the ground, a small crack that becomes a big crack in the air, is a problem.
Randy Robison encourages us to trust God and rise above our circumstances. Next.
It's such a joy to share this time with you. I really wish we could see. I know many of you said, I'm so glad you can't, because I'm not, you know, it's early in the morning when we happen to watch you and so forth. But it really means a lot to us to share this time with you. I'm James Robison. Betty and I are thrilled to have this time. Our son is here, Randy, and we're actually giving away two books. One of them is A Dad's Blessing. I wrote this. It's things that fathers can say and should say and understand that I had to learn, and I'm still learning as a grandfather, how we bless our children. I want to just say this in relationship to a dad's blessing. I don't think dad has a greater blessing than the children that we've been blessed to have. And our son. And our son is a wonderfully gifted writer. And he's written a book. This is his second book. Rise Above, How to Go Faster, Farther, and Higher in Your Faith, to literally be carried by faith, lifted above the circumstances that can pull you down, and understand what it is that limits this incredible ascent into the presence of God and the peace He offers. Would you welcome our son, Randy Robison, to life today? Would you? Glad to have you.
Appreciate you having me on.
And we appreciate the four wonderful grandchildren that you have blessed us with, and your wife, Debbie. She's a joy. I want to cover ground because, Randy, to be honest with you, you know Mom and Dad will love you and proud of you, but I'm amazed at your spiritual journey and depth, and you really excite me when you're teaching and sharing what God is showing you. And I got to just be honest with you, as I read what you write, I listen to you talk about it, the Word of God is alive, and because you have an academic, excellent demeanor and spirit, you go in depth to try to understand the fullness of a particular word or phrase, and it's wonderful how you do it. So can I just ask you why you got excited about talking about this and about flying and why that was on your heart?
Well, you know, you say that you act like I know a lot. Every time I read the Bible, I feel like I don't know much because there's so much there. There's so much depth there, and there's so much application there that when you really start to unpack it, I just see new stuff over and over, and I get new understanding. So I'm excited to be able to share it because it's helped me so much. And so I think it can help others too.
Yeah, and it's not like you haven't been exposed to a lot of good, gifted teachers through the years, because we've been blessed to bring the most famous Christians and preachers, not only through our Bible conferences and conferences around the world, but also right here. So it's not like you haven't been exposed to in-depth teaching. You're saying the Word of God is so alive, so filled with truth, that it's continually exciting.
It is, and I think a lot of that's a product of our journey. As we go through, different things hit us differently at different times, and rightly so. So, yeah, in this book, it's kind of funny because I wrote the first draft of it and met with the editors, and they said, you know, I think you need something to kind of bring it down to where people can understand it, maybe some kind of analogy. And that was in Nashville, and I thought, man, what kind of analogy am I going to use? You're talking about, you know, your fear of letting go, your fear of losing control, your fear of the unknown. Because all of those things hold us back in really living a life full of faith sometimes. And so I literally left that meeting, drove to the airport, and checked in my rental car, and got on the flight, and I'm thinking about it, and it as they rev up the engines, I'm like, oh, okay, God, just get us there safely. And I thought, why do I hate this? And it's the fear of the unknown. It's the lack of control. It's the knowledge that, yes, some things have gone wrong with some people. You know, and I was like, that's it. that's the way we approach our faith a lot of times, is with that fear of losing control. And as a consequence, you know, we've got our ticket. Jesus died for the sin of the world, and he's got a ticket with everybody's name on it. But a lot of times we go to the terminal and we sit there and, you know, we have a good band come in and we have a little coffee shop and we never get on board. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to get to your destination and you're not going to experience the journey unless you get on board. And getting on board means a great level of surrender.
It's faith. It's letting go. You've got to trust your life and future.
Yes.
And because it is the unknown, the journey is, it can hold us back because we think, I don't know about this.
I don't know. And a lot of us don't trust God in his goodness and who he says he is because we either don't know him or something has happened, we've been hurt. And so, you know, it's kind of like getting on a plane and going, you know, is that guy sitting next to me a terrorist, you know, or does that pilot have a death wish? You know, these are things that cross your mind. Well, they cross my mind every time I get on a plane. Maybe not yours, but that's what I think about. But if we don't understand that God is good and he has good intentions, then it's hard to get on board.
Well, you know, and it is faith, though, because, see, you can say you believe in flying, you believe airplanes work, you believe they've gotten people somewhere, and you can believe all you want to, but you haven't put any trust or faith in it till you get on, and
it takes
off with you.
Until you get on board.
Exactly.
I can have faith for other people all day long, right? But until I have, my faith is active and alive and daily, mm-hmm. it's meaningless.
All right, tell me how you apply this, because you do talk about lift, you talk about the aspects of it, you talk about drag, you talk about the types of resistance that can keep you from flying and staying in flight.
Mm-hmm. As I was reading exciting materials like FAA manuals and pilot training, some of it's pretty dry. It's amazing, though, how many of the truths, the laws of aerodynamics parallel God's spiritual laws. And we really have to conform to the laws of aerodynamics in order to fly. We can't just, you know, make a plane that's shaped any way we want. Mm-hmm. It's got to be shaped in the way that overcomes the laws of this world, the aerodynamics, the laws of gravity, in order to really fly. And with our faith, we have to really shape our faith in such a way that is compatible with God's eternal, absolute laws. So it's not just an exercise in what we want to believe. It's really lining up in the way that will help us soar.
Now, you're not going to defy the law of gravity by just throwing a rock and expecting it to soar, because it has not put another law of aerodynamics in place that will maintain it. It took us a long time to understand it by watching birds that evidently God put in them to understand, but there were actually some laws in place. And you're not going to live by faith if you don't allow a supernatural power to lift you beyond your circumstances, beyond your lack of faith or confidence in God. You're going to be held down. So you go through how this happens and compare it. I want you just to take off on some of the things that you would like the viewer and the reader to comprehend.
One of the biggest things that struck me in this process was when I was writing on the section of maintenance, because I don't know about most people. A lot of people grumble when they say we're going to stay on the ground another 15 minutes while maintenance checks something out. I'm always like, guys, check it out, right? Find everything there is to find and fix it.
Yeah.
Because a crack on the ground, a small crack that becomes a big crack in the air is a problem, mm-hmm. right? And I don't want to go through that. Well, we need spiritual maintenance. We need to find out what those cracks are in our beliefs before we really try to run with it, because a lot of times if you run with some wrong ideas, that little crack becomes a big crack and it creates great problems for you.
Mm-hmm.
So an interesting thing that I found, and it's one of those verses that I'd read. I'm going to read it so I don't get it wrong. But in James, he talks about temptation and sin. And as I looked at this, I started realizing that I don't understand temptation the way that I should, in a way that I can combat it, you know, effectively. And I think I misunderstand sin and how we get there a lot of times. And this, as I talk to people about this, I find that this is very common. The bottom line is this: temptation is not sin. That may take a minute to get, because a lot of people feel, because I'm tempted, I'm a sinner, but it's a process. Now, how can I say this? Jesus was tempted in all things, but without sin.
Mm-hmm. So if it was sin, he would have been sinning.
He would have been a sinner. Mm-hmm. Either that or I think most of us just kind of default to, well, he wasn't really tempted because he's perfect and he was God.
No, he was tempted.
He was tempted.
And the devil hit him head on, the one and only devil hit him head on, straight at him, and he was exposed to all temptation, common, and he understood what we went through because he was in the same way tempted.
The experience, the first thing Satan did when he tempted Jesus is he came to him when he'd been fasting 40 days and 40 nights. Now, I don't know about you, if I miss a meal, I think I'm going to die, right? I don't know how you go that long without eating. Jesus had a legitimate need and desire for food when Satan came and said, turn this rock into this stone into bread. Mm-hmm. The fact that Jesus responded to Satan means that he thought about it. He at least processed that temptation.
Sure.
To do something, to fulfill a legitimate need in a way that was not God's plan. Because that's what temptation is. It says, you've got a need or a desire, you need to fulfill it in a way that's not God's way. All right?
Right.
So Jesus went through that temptation process. He didn't give in, and that's why he didn't sin. Let me read the part, this in James. So it tells us what temptation is. It says, each one is tempted when he is carried away and enticed by his own lust. Then when lust has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And when sin is accomplished, it brings forth death. Now, I really had to get into the Greek to get to the connotation of this. And I'm not saying it's a bad translation. I'm saying that it's a translation that may not hit us in the true way that this means. Let me unpack this. Temptation happens when we are first carried away. That is not so much abandonment as it is being drawn out. It's more like being taken away. In other words, you're in a place of peace. You're in a good place. Temptation comes along and first draws you out of that place. Second thing that happens is you are enticed or lured, and that's literally what happens. We're drawn to something. The thing that we're drawn to is our own lust. Now, lust in this connotation is not necessarily sexual. I mean, it can be, mm-hmm. but we use the term lust for life or bloodlust to express mm-hmm. what this really is, which is a strong need or desire, okay? So
it could be food or compulsive buying.
It can be any of these things.
It could be something you want.
Yeah, and it isn't necessarily bad.
No.
It could be our need for love or affection
sure,
or
sex,
justice.
Sex is not bad, even though that's the one that is most closely brought up when you mention lust.
Yes, but that's not actually what the original language is speaking of. When lust has conceived, it does mean give birth, but that Greek word is more often translated as arrested or seized, right?
Hooked.
When we see that thing, we're drawn out of where we are. We are lured to an idea that is not of God that will fulfill a legitimate need or desire. If we grab hold of it, that's when it grabs hold of us.
Mm-hmm.
That's when the sin is completed. That's when it happens. And that leads to, now death, we know we don't all die when we sin or nobody would be here tonight, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what does he mean by death? It means darkness and separation. So here's this process, the temptation process. Now we know that temptation is not sin. That frees us from the guilt and condemnation of fighting the temptation. When we have that bad thought, that thought that is not of God, that wants us to fulfill a need or desire in a way that is not His plan, we can be carried away by that. We can be drawn to it. We can think about it. But until we take hold of it and do it, bring it to completion, it's not sin. That's why Paul can say, be angry, but do not sin. Understanding this is freedom. I got good news. You are not the sinners you may think you are. And here's how I can say that. If you have these temptations and these thoughts and you're battling those, if you're living under condemnation and guilt, that's the enemy because he will tempt you and then accuse you of being a sinner because you thought about it. But until you bring that sin to a completion, you're not the sinner that you may think you are. This is where spiritual warfare takes place. This is where we have great victory in our lives. You can celebrate the victory and stop living beaten down like you're this horrible person, because you're not.
Yeah, and that is so true. And once the enemy convinces you you're already bad, it's real easy to say, well, I might as well go ahead and do it anyway.
That's
I thought about it, wanted
true.
It, and that's the way he operates. Do you like what you're hearing? Does this make sense to you? You appreciate what Randy's hearing? because the whole book is just, it's just a free flow of the wisdom and insight God's given someone that really cares about discovery and finding a treasure and sharing it. Have you had any experiences where somebody's come to you and you were able to put this into some kind of expression that helped them in their own journey? Somebody.
Interestingly, while I was writing this, a friend of mine called me, and he and his wife have had some difficulties in their marriage. And so we were talking, and he's always been very open with me, and I hope I've been an encouragement to him, but I asked him, how are you guys doing? You know, it's been several years since they went through some rough stuff, so it's been good for a while. And he said, well, we kind of went through a rough patch. And I said, do you want to talk about it? And so we did. And the short version is this. His wife was online, as we all are these days, and she got a friend request from an old boyfriend. She accepted the friend request, and they started chatting, you know, hey, how you doing? Where are you at? You know, how old are your kids? Blah, 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 as we do. And there's nothing wrong with that. And then the conversation got a little deeper, a little more personal, and kept going. This went on for a period of time, a couple weeks, and she got drawn in to this old relationship. She realized that, you know what, this is going in a place that it shouldn't go, and she cut it off, unfriended him, gone, said, you know what, we're not going to have this kind of relationship. Then a few days later, she told her husband. I asked him, so how did you react? And he said, man, I let her have it. I told her what a sinner she was, and I said, you laid condemnation on her? And he goes, well, yeah. Yeah, I was mad. I said, let me read something to you. And I read him that passage in James. And I said, did she have a phone call conversation with him? No. Did she meet him? No. Did she, you know, she cut the relationship off? You said, yeah, she did. I said, did she sin? Or did maybe she go through this temptation process and have great victory? He goes, oh, I didn't think of it that way. I said, let me ask you this. What happened when you responded with the condemnation and the guilt and the anger? He goes, well, it's caused us some problems. Yeah, I mean, we got a bit of a rift. So what would have happened if you'd have gone to her and she'd have confessed all this to you and you'd have said, you know what, honey? I am so proud of you for winning that battle. Thank you. Thank you for that victory. And he just broke. He said, man, that would have changed everything.
Isn't that good? Don't you appreciate that, Drew? That's liberating. That is liberating. That's called Set Free. And Randy, thank you. The book is, you know, you can go online and get it in the bookstores. I'll tell you what, we'll send it to you. And but there's a condition. I want to encourage you to do what we always ask our viewers to do. Experience life freely and fully by releasing it to others freely. In other words, let the river flow. I'm going to ask every one of you watching, if you will, to begin to express the love of God in a very clear manifestation. I want you to look with your eyes. I want you to hear in your heart and your mind what you believe God wants you to hear, and then just respond. But watch. The tendency is so often to turn away from what we ought to be looking at. Too often we look at what we ought to turn away from. This is something you ought to look at and not turn away from, because you are the answer. I want you to watch this carefully and prayerfully.
An unencumbered life allows you to enjoy the basics. A beautiful sunrise, clean air, a loving family. Though hardly a time of plenty by Western standards, the people in these villages would say they are content. But after living on the edge of life's margins, a natural disaster like this drought in southern Africa is all it took to tip the scales for these families who now find themselves in a struggle for survival because of the lack of food. Discolored hair, sunken eyes, sagging skin, These are the symptoms of malnutrition, and they become more prevalent in a time like this, this survival mode. If it continues, many will die. But even for the children who do survive, irreparable damage will occur if they don't get the nutrition they need at this crucial stage of development. The problem is serious, but the solution is simple. A daily bowl of food over the next months not only ensures that these children won't go hungry, but that they will receive the nutrition needed at this critical point in their lives. With your help, Life Outreach International can continue the feeding programs that have saved millions. That's the miracle of love. That's the miracle of mission feeding.
There's no way that I can adequately tell you how much I love every one of those little precious children. 25 years ago, we started holding them, feeding them, loving them, and wondered if people watching would care, and you do. You have no idea that even sometimes greater than the missionaries, you're the greater inspiration because you see a need and meet it. You are the answer to the missionaries' prayers, their hopes, and you're the answer to the mothers of desperate children's prayers and hopes. And I didn't know if you would do that, but you have. And you have literally helped us, because a lot of times when we're showing those little children, I want them just to stop a minute, and I want to say, don't you want to hold them? Don't you want to help them? Don't you want to restore the beautiful glimmer in their eyes? Don't you want to see them smiling and playing and being happy? And they don't have to have a lot of stuff to be happy. They just need life. And you know what? You said yes. So I want to ask you to do it again. Betty and I have been asking a long time, and Betty, these people have been the answer to prayer. And believe they will again.
They really have, James. And please don't stop. We're always going to bring you the needs as we find them, because there's so many of them out there. These children need our help. Some of them won't make it, probably. It's too late. But most of them can, if we're there in time to have the nourishment they need for their little bodies. So please join with us and reach out with the heart of God, and let's make a difference. Let's give life to so many of these precious children.
And I think if you've watched us, you understand what we do here at Life. We always, because you are our main focus to help you spiritually, to see your life changed. And nearly all the response that comes, even calls now, they will be from people like you saying, please help me. Yes, you better believe we will, because we want the best for you. But you've been willing to say for years now, we'll give them life. Now, here's what I want to ask you to do. Now, think about this. Twice a year, we come to you, and we say we want you to make a gift that will keep giving life for the next months. Twice a year. And we're asking you to help us take care of 400,000 children that we have found in desperate need and help us feed them for the next months. $30, $50, or $100 will feed 3, 5, or 10 for the next several months. So your gift will just keep on giving. Take your bank card, call, go online, lifeday.org. Please do it. I know you think, I need to do it. No, do it. Do it now, because the missionaries are waiting. The children need our help. Make the best gift you can. We're going to send you some gifts to bless you, some books that will bless you and others you love, I promise you, other things that will inspire you. And then remember this, we've got 100,000 children in drought-stricken Angola right now that are facing immediate death. I'm asking 1,000 people right now to give $1,000 and feed 100 children, because that's what $1,000 will do. Just like $100 will feed 10 for the next months, $1,000 will feed 100. I'm asking 1,000 people to help us take care of that 100,000 children that are facing death immediately if we don't get them relief. Father, I pray everyone watching will right now go to the phone or go online and make the very best gift they can. In Jesus' name, thank you for responding. If you ever get a visit, you be determined and you call until you get through. Thank you for doing it.
In remote and impoverished areas of Africa, families are suffering, facing death by starvation. And those hit the hardest are their children. Life's Mission Feeding Program is there, able to feed and care for over 400,000 children in crisis areas of Angola, Mozambique, and Sudan. With previous food reserves gone and Angola facing its worst drought and food shortage in 20 years, we desperately need to replenish our supplies for our feeding programs immediately. Your life-saving gift of $30, $50, or $100 will help feed and care for 3, 5, or 10 children for the next 3 months. With your gift of any amount, we'll send you this inspirational two-book gift set. A Dad's Blessing by James Robison is packed with valuable fatherly wisdom and insight for dads of all ages. Rise Above by James and Betty's son, Randy Robison, will show you how to soar far above the circumstances of life and go higher in your walk with God. With your gift of $100 or more to help feed 10 children, you'll receive our Blessing Bowls, a great way to teach your family about giving and a daily reminder of God's provision for hungry and hurting children. Finally, please consider a gift of $1,000 or more to help feed 100 children, and you may request our 2014 commemorative glass sculpture, The Blessing. Please call, write, or make your gift online today.
I've been in the malnutrition clinics, and my heart broke as I watched those children struggle for every breath. And I watched the moms. That broke my heart, to watch them so patiently waiting there on a concrete floor with just a mat, wanting desperately to get help for their children, having walked miles. We'd like to put the malnutrition clinics out of business, because we want to feed these children. We want to give them life. We want to give them a chance. By going to the phone right now, dialing the number that's on your screen, and making a gift, making a contribution to life in Africa.
Well, Betty and I just say thank you so much for your help. I think you're going to be blessed by Randy's book, Rise Above. I think you got just a little taste of the insight, and I thank God for the gift God's given him and the fact we can share it with you. A dad's blessing, the other gifts that will bless you, and we just want to thank God for the gift of a son that loves his wife and his four children and is a blessing to all of us. Would you say thanks to Randy for being with us? Randy, thank you. Love you and thank you. Good job. Real good. Thank you for being a friend to so many people. God bless you. You really are a friend for life.
I wish I could do more for Life Outreach International, but I'm saving for retirement.
We have a plan that can help you do both. Contact Life Planning Services today.
Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.